Welcome to Bladebringers, a Legion of Everblade focused War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm your host, Ronlor, aka Tyrone, and I'm working on the assembly of some new models. Joining me this week is Cutter. Hey, Cutter, how you doing?
Ahoy. I had a pretty good weekend. Got to play games all day yesterday, and today is also pretty good.
Right on, that's legit. Also here this week, returning guest, Swamp Mist. Welcome back.
Hi. I just got done with 2.5 weeks of working at a summer camp for kids with autism.
Oh, right on. That's awesome, man.
So
good for you.
And I'm here despite the fact that people are making me play Menoth instead of Legion right now.
Well, these things happen. You'll come back to Legion eventually.
I'm playing Menoth while I build up my Legion collection to a point that's actually playable.
Yeah, I understand. All right. So this week, we're mostly going to cover a tournament that both Cutter and Swamp Mist attended. Cutter did end up playing Legion, and Swamp Mist, as he just said, was playing Menoth. We're mostly going to get into Cutter's games, but since Swamp Mist was there, I'm sure he'll have some insight to contribute as well. Why don't we get into it, Cutter?
Yeah, this event was at Toy Wiz in Nanuet, New York, and so three of us from the Brooklyn meta drove up there. Charlie drove us and another guy, Alex. They were both playing Kador, so that's interesting too. You never really know what Charlie's going to bring. So we got to chat on the way up and talk about kind of where Kador is, and I'll get into that later too because I did end up playing one of them. So my first match was into Gene, who was playing Protectorate, and he was playing Durst in Faithful Masses and Thyra in Exemplar Interdiction. So is that what you had your Thyra in too?
Yeah. I single listed Thyra Exemplars.
Okay, cool. So he ended up dropping Durst. I don't know if maybe that's the best choice or not. I know that he's getting into Protectorate. He dropped Durst, I dropped Animag. It was a matchup I was hoping to see because I believe Durst is also in the Champions packet, right?
Yes, he is. Although, yes. Note, Exemplar Interdiction is not.
Okay. Yeah, I know that was one of the weird things about the Protectorate Champions. So maybe we won't even see them. I don't know.
I do not plan on playing Champions events in this packet with my Protectorate.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at maybe playing Champions with Legion because it has my standard pairing in it of Animag Veil 2.
Yeah, it looks really strong.
Yeah, it was really see how Durst kind of played out. We were playing Mirage was the first board, so I got first pick. Just seemed like a good idea because I wanted to get up the table. I don't really like Menoth being able to dictate my behavior, so going first against a Protectorate player seemed good, especially Durst. And in general, both sides were pretty agreeable. This was a table that had a lot of forests on it, so I felt like whatever side I got, I could probably put my Hellmouths in a pretty good place. So I was playing the Animag list that has a unit of Warmongers, always with Gorag, Blightbringer, Golob, Amok, Chosen, Min Rotwings, two Hellmouths, and Spell Martyrs. So in general, the list is fairly well-rounded. I know Simon was championing this for a while. I played something similar to it in CID, but I drifted away from Golob because I really wanted to try double Chosen and maybe more Ogryn. But for me, I found that this ended up feeling a little bit better. One of the problems that I had with the other version of Animag that has either more Chosen and or more Warmongers is that sometimes you can't really clean up when your dice don't go quite like you would like. So, or something Tufts, or like one of the particular issues I had was playing into Vlad 2 with Demacor, with whatever the UA is, Drago Dragovich or something. And the problem with that was, you know, there'd be like a couple Demacor standing around and I just couldn't kill them all. So having Golob and having the Rotwings helps a lot in that capacity because it gives you some mobility around the board. And it also helps you kind of clean the lines up a little bit and get to things that the Hellmouths pull in, because sometimes the Ogryn can get kind of jammed up if you're trying to move around like that. So basically, I set the Hellmouths up just to be kind of a pain, a little aggressive. One of them was in the circular zone, so that made that easy to score. And then what basically happened was he played a little cagey, and I think that that's probably good, but he didn't approach super hard. He got caught up behind some of the terrain, the wall that that team lets you put out, along with the forests, kind of created some issues for him getting up the table. And ultimately, it let me jam him out of my circular zone completely and off of one of my flags. So it just kind of gave me a pretty strong scenario presence where he had to get through a bunch of tentacles and a bunch of warmongers and chosen. And, you know, there were like, I would throw a couple birds up there now and again just to jam lanes up. And Animag was extremely safe. She was sitting next to a Blightbringer behind a cloud or a Hellmouth or a forest. And she was just kind of hanging out in the back. And Spellmarters were kind of sitting on the flags. And he didn't have a lot that could kind of reach out and touch those little fragile solos. So that ended up causing some pretty big problems in that the board kind of came under my control, which is what I was hoping would happen if I went first. And it just didn't quite hit hard enough to really push through that in a way that let him kind of bring other models up. So I think in general, if he'd been a little bit more aggressive, probably infeated and just ran things at me, some of the stuff would have survived and maybe that would have been the way to go. But overall, I think it was probably a little bit of a tough matchup for him. The choir being able to block all of my gallows was a bit annoying. But overall, I think it felt pretty good in terms of Animag. I don't know if that's what you would expect, being a Protectorate player.
So Durst is a potato, and it turns out that Animag really likes eating potatoes. They're her favorite meal, and he is their king. So
she's a toolbox of potato peelers.
Yep. Like, especially because you had RFP from Golab that could help you, like, remove some of that, like, dude recursion.
Yeah, he did have zealots, and yeah. I did definitely eat and or, well, I guess they both eat them.
You ate some zealots, and I think, like, the fact is that Durst's whole game plan is to dirtle up the middle of the table and just out-armor you and, like, force you into bad positions so he can try to get trades with the Faithful Masses Hand of Vengeance theme benefit.
Yeah.
And the fact is that 4 or 5 Warjacks don't trade efficiently into the stuff in PT. Zealots aren't great at it either. And he had, like, he didn't have any of the mounted paladins. He had, like, one.
Some of the solos.
He had, like, Vilmon and I think, like, one normal paladin.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And a Covenant and...
So, like, his list was not prepared in any way, I don't think, to deal with what Animag brings to the table. I don't know why you would ever not drop Thyra there. Like, Thyra has so many tools for winning in that matchup.
Yeah, do you want to talk about Thyra a little bit? Because that's how my game ended, was on scenario for me. So if you want to go into Thyra, that might be interesting.
So I can talk a little bit about my Thyra list, because I do think it's relevant in the fact that I think it's really good against PT.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. My matches were quick also, because I got the bye round 1 and I matched up against Schwanky from Battle Driven round 4, and he and I had driven up together, and he really hated his bearing that day, so neither of us felt like playing round 4. Or he didn't feel like playing round 4, and I was like, I don't need to play against Schwanky. I can do this on Wednesday when he's playing lists he actually wants to play.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Thyra EI is really interesting because it takes the base numbers of Exemplar Interdiction, which are just high damage, and adds Occultation, which we're a Legion, we know how good Occultation is. It adds Silence of Death, which is one of the better damage buffs in the game. Yeah. It adds her feat is just a really strong threat bonus feat, in that it's not just bonus speed, it also allows you to do stuff like pop out of combat and charge back in. It lets every friendly faction model within 12 of her apparate at the start of its activation. So it gives you a ton of weird play. We're going to get into it. I played into Magnus, the same Merc player that played against Cutter in the finals, round 2. And I felt like if I wasn't unpracticed at the game in general, just due to the way, like, I haven't been able to get many games in the past couple weeks, if I had more practice and if I had an opponent who was playing Magnus on the regular, I think it was a very good matchup for him, or at least like a 50-50. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's a big part of her kit. Also, she gets to take Blood of Martyrs. And let me tell you, if there is one Jack I trust to trade well into Chosen, it is Blood of Martyrs. Because
yeah, why is that?
Yeah.
So his weapons have Grievous Wounds.
Good start.
Exemplar Interdiction gives his weapons Blessed.
Also good.
He's base POW 16, 18 with Choir, and has base Hand of Vengeance, the theme benefit that you normally get from Faithful Masses. So he's not unlikely to be POW 20 Blessed Grievous Wounds.
Yeah, so that's what, Matt 9?
11 if you Carnage.
All right, yeah, she has Carnage too.
Oh, man.
As I'll go into, my list was playing Severius Zero because he just came out from Gen Con. And he has Eye of Menoth.
Yeah.
So it's actually Matt 12, PS 21.
God.
That seems reasonable.
He also has Sidestep, which is a big deal for being able to like get into multiple Chosen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Given his 1-inch melee, yeah. That helps a lot, yeah.
Yeah, so you get to like kill one Chosen dude, sidestep two in, kill the next one because he has two swords, and then like even if he only gets like three Chosen that turn, that's a significant bump up in like the scenario pressure.
Yeah, only three Chosen seems fine.
Yeah, and also the other thing that the theme gives her is Fire of Salvation, who is nuts.
Yeah.
So he has 14 points. He's speed 5. His weapon has Dispel on it. He has Relentless Charge. He has Righteous Vengeance. And he's Mat 8, PS 18 before battle or Carnage or Silence of Death. And then the rest of the list for me, personally, I don't know what your opponent was playing. Today, I'm missing Gravis. And I'm like debating some of the choices there. Gravis gives Desperate Pace, so the theme has a little bit more threat along with her feet. Oh, also, because I almost forgot, she has Stranglehold.
That's a fair spell.
It's so good, especially when you have Eye of Menoth.
Yeah, really.
The list that I brought was Thyra with a Hierophant to up the range on Stranglehold and her buffs, Occultation and Silence of Death specifically. Blood of Martyrs, Fire of Salvation, which is just like a ridiculously strong Jack package, in my opinion. A Knight Exemplar Seneschal. Another thing, Knight Exemplar Seneschals are dumb. We learned today, or yesterday, that they don't just contest while disabled, they can score.
Yeah.
So if you have one on a flag, your opponent not only has to kill it, they have to contest that flag.
That's pretty brutal.
Scrutator Pontate Severius with a Dervish. Exemplar Warder Elias Gade, who will become either a Warder or a second Seneschal in the future. Amin Choir, 2 units of Knights Exemplar with UA, a max unit of Knight Exemplar Errants, and a max unit of Exemplar Cinerators with Officer. So Cinerators are also, I think, important for the matchup into PT because they have takedown base. So combining that with Silence of Death and Grievous Wounds on Blood of Martyrs, you have a lot of places where you just remove tough.
Yeah,
which...
yeah, that seems like a pretty good answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So, really reliant on tough to kind of be not, as good as they are.
Not just Chosen.
Oh, like the whole list, yeah.
Yeah. Thyra's models have a 33% higher chance to kill pretty much any warrior model in PT than another list of the same under a similar caster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a significant increase in like the efficiency of her list, especially because Warmongers and Chosen will live after toughing sometimes because their armor is high enough.
Yeah, I've definitely had that happen. Mm-hmm. Chosen in particular, some people tilt pretty hard when that one Chosen that's sitting in an aura with an arm buff on it just kind of keeps toughing, and or it doesn't keep toughing, but you keep not killing it, and then it's healing up slowly while it's lying on the ground.
It toughs, it goes to 4, you do 3 points, it goes to 4. You do 1 point, it goes to 6.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you've eaten 20 points of models.
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. So I think that Thyra was definitely the correct call for him. Your other list could maybe have, I mean, I don't know what his list was, but I think that like just Thyra's base kit. And then like your other list had Double Throne, which does not want to see a Stranglehold caster ever, especially not a Stranglehold caster with a 12-inch Stranglehold and a 6-inch teleport at the end of her turn.
Yeah, who also gets plus one to damage. And
yeah, if he had Pontate, I don't know what his list was like.
Oh no, he didn't have 7-0.
My first game, round two, I played into Mike, who Cutter played in the finals. He played
Nick.
He had Ostrom Magnus. He ended up dropping Magnus, which was double Idrians, three Nomads, the like shield and pokey stick light, Magnus's special jack with the Arcanode that isn't a character.
Oh, I took a picture of the list if you want me to read it.
I think the only thing I'm missing are like the solos and one or two units of Chaos Elims.
Yeah, it was Magnus 2, three Nomads, a Talon, a Renegade, two Max Idrians with UA, Aeon Holt, Eliminators, Orin, Iris, Eilish, Ragman.
So I dropped Thyra. Obviously, it was my only list. I won the roll, so I got to go first, which was nice. It was Recon 2. My Cinerators went off way to one side, so I wouldn't have to worry about them getting feeded on because they're speed 4. And my Errants took the other zone, ended up getting prayed. I'm not going to go too heavily into the game. It got really grindy. I missed porting Thyra onto my flag to score it, although he could have, because I went first, he could have contested it. But overall, I feel like it was a good enough matchup for me. I lost bottom of 5-6-1 on scenario, which for anyone who's played against Magnus is like, says it's probably a good matchup and you played against a better player, which was the case. Nick. Yes. Nick is clearly a better player than me. I definitely think that given like some play around, maybe if I had Gravis in the list instead of the Knight Exemplar UAs, etc., I could have, that match would have been winnable for me.
Yeah,
but I didn't lose.
Is tough.
Yeah. It's definitely like he's one of those casters that I really just need to like convince my local player who jumps to like 10 different lists in a month to just sit down and play for a couple games with me so I can get used to it. But I definitely think that that's one of the ones where Thyra's like solid. So, and then Cutter, I don't actually, who did you play round two?
Round two, I played against John Massa, who was playing Scorn.
Ah, right. Yeah,
yeah, it was one of the other Scorn players there. And the two lists that he brought were Zaltu and the Exalted. So that's basically some lights mixed in with as many immortals as you can fit in a list. So
is it just the support lights and shamans?
Yeah, it's basically Zaltu, Agonizer, Kraya, two Drakes, a Shaman, and then like all the immortals.
Drakes are interesting.
Bunch of Guardians, Hakkar, and then three full units of immortals, and then like a min unit of Beast Handlers just to keep the lights in line, I guess. Because what is Scorn even about if you're not abusing your beasts? So he did not drop that. The other list was Masters of War with Xerxes 1, and that one was an Agonizer with Tiberian. That was the full battle group. And then it was Redeem with the full unit of Ferox, and then Max Satrati, the Tycom. Let's see, Satrati did have Vorkesh. There were Swordsmen in UA, Incendiarii, and then a Willbreaker. And basically, when we got into list selection, we were kind of looking at each other's lists, and we were like, well, he was asking like what some of the models did, because I think he said that their Legion player had left or something, or hadn't played in a long time. So I was explaining kind of what all the Primal Terror stuff does, and we got to Amok, and we're talking about that, and I was like, well, I pretty much know what I'm picking here. I'm pretty sure I know what you're picking. And I don't think we even really need to do this list selection process, because Zaltu absolutely does not like seeing a mock on the board, because then all of the immortals are not incorporeal ever. And
I also think he hates seeing... Does Golub stop soul taking? I don't actually know.
No, Golub only eats living and undead.
Ah, okay.
So, no, all the souls would still happen. The only thing that would stop that would be, like, consume on the Hellmouths, but that's not going to come up a whole lot. No. So, yeah, it's mostly just that the whole incorporeal trick doesn't work out, and Animag has no trouble breaking armor at all. So I think that that ends up being kind of tough. The Immortals will eventually probably get through PT, but I feel like the damage is kind of low too, maybe. So it could be, it would be quite a slog, and some of his normal tricks wouldn't be working the way that you would like.
I'm not sure he gets through Chosen.
I don't know. Yeah,
mathematically ever.
Yeah, it's, I think it would be tough. He'd have to have like, yeah, I don't even know what he'd have to do. But so he ended up picking Masters of War, and I played into something like that before. One of the local guys runs Masters of War with Xerxes 1, and was not running the Incendiary AI. So I've seen a couple different versions of the list, and basically he did end up going first. The table was, I could pick some pretty decent sides. There was a trench in one of the zones on the other side, but I didn't really care about that because he didn't have, I mean, he had Incendiary AI, but the AoEs are going to be a pain anyway. And I'd rather hide the Hellmouths behind forests and clouds rather than like a wall on a trench. That just doesn't seem as useful. So I kind of just put the Hellmouths in a position fairly far back, actually. This was on Recon 2. So the ability to have the Hellmouths in the zones wasn't super relevant anyway. And I think what kind of ended up happening in this match was the Satrati and Tiberian and the Agonizer and the Incendiarii all stayed kind of central. And the Swordsman and the Ferox were left to kind of try and deal with the zones as the kind of central mass moved up the board with Xerxes. And ultimately, I think it was just a little bit too cagey for Primal Terrors. And I mean, I kind of saw that with Durst too. If Primal Terrors is given the opportunity, it will crash into you. And then you have a pretty mighty brick of stuff to try and get through. Tactician helps that a lot, but can be tough. Xerxes has no problem killing things, especially with takedown. So the list will absolutely kill Chosen and Warmongers. The problem was I got up on Scenario pretty quickly, even though the Incendiarii were like raining fire down all over my Mongers, and it hit a mock with a lucky drift, and the Hellmouth was on fire all game, but it can't actually damage it. So it was just this burning mouth in the ground that just made it more terrifying, I guess.
I'm not sure that continuous fire is all that great against PT.
Well, it's really good against Warmongers because it's only dice up four.
Yeah.
And yeah,
if they get like, it ends up causing some problems. If he killed a mock, that would have been really annoying. Not because I needed him so much for Rise, because nothing was ever going to tough, but because I really wanted him on the flag.
Well, unless your opponent, you know, used their Incendiary to kill your Warmongers, then they can tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, they could tough in that case. But he actually played really well in not giving me vengeance and just like kind of raining low POW fire attacks on everything and then letting all my stuff burn. And that did end up making a difference because he did enough damage to Gorag and a couple of the Warmongers to make them pretty easy targets. And then Amok was in dire. I had to move him over near the objective and start healing him and kind of putting him in a bad place because I just didn't want him to burn to death. And that would have been sad. It would be a sad fate for him. But what ended up being really helpful actually was I had to keep, because of how that scenario is set up, it's really annoying for the Blightbringer. And I was not thrilled about putting the Blightbringer close enough to Tiberian to, you know, kind of play the odds there under Xerxes' feet to think maybe it would live. I didn't really like the idea of that. So I ended up having to keep it behind everything just because of how the terrain was laid out. And so the Blightbringer couldn't contribute all that much, and it got kind of locked between the Hellmouths and all the other stuff that was back there. And so Golob ended up being really strong in that he could kind of run around and pick up points in the different zones. At the end of the game, to clear Redeem, who had tough put on him, Golob also got to run across the table and kind of stand within 5 inches in order to make sure that that he went down. And because I didn't have that many attacks left at that point, it was on the side with the Chosen. I think there were only two left. So Golub just being kind of a support piece that game, I don't know if he really even killed anything. He may have killed a couple things, but overall, Golub was really just running around, either scoring zones or denying tough and doing that kind of stuff. The Rotwings were very useful in that matchup because when the Ferox kind of got dug in and they had dodge, and I got to pull off Defender's Ward with one Hex Blast, but it just wasn't in the cards the next turn. So it ended up being really good to have the speed 7 birds able to kind of maneuver around, clear off some of the front Ferox who were kind of being a pain, and them lowering the defense and then having Carnage and then having Finisher and all the other stuff along with Grievous Wounds, you know, it just made the Ferox a lot easier to deal with. And then they could move out of the way, and then all the Chosen crashed into the rest of them. So overall, I think the Rotwings fit my way that I play the list a little bit better because I really like those versatile moving parts kind of lists. And that came out pretty well here as I was continuing to try and press my scenario lead. And he ended up pushing attrition a bit more than I think he needed to. I think that was like the big turning point because I hadn't even really touched the Citrati unit. My dice rolls just didn't really work out. And Tiberian was just walking around smashing Chosen. So I hadn't really done a lot to him either. So I think he could have let attrition go a little bit longer and focused more on throwing swordsmen in to contest the flag, contest the zone, make sure that Tiberian is in the other zone, and maybe score on that flag a little bit. It would have kept him in the game a lot longer. And ultimately, I think he was just bricking up a little bit. And it's one of the weird things that I've been seeing in this packet is the way that people are going to have to start changing their way that they play. Sometimes you just have to play suboptimally for how you want the list to work because of how scenario is functioning. And in this case, I had taken an aggressive approach to scenario, and he had to respond to that aggressive scenario play aggressively.
Yeah.
And he responded defensively with some mind to attrition, and it just didn't work out for him.
I actually think that's a big thing that I think is why I'm enjoying Thyra and PT as like kind of exemplars of that. The packet right now really rewards aggressive scenario play, and there's a lot of lists, Mercs primary among them, and NPT, that really punish defensive scenario play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the things that you get really bad about if you're trying to be defensive into PT is those Hellmouths just will never die. And so there's scenarios like Mirage, they just score every turn, and they, like, kill your contesting pieces, or they're just back enough that they're still contesting, but they can, like, run tentacles to contest more. And you really need to, like, I think the place where PT is going to falter is when it gets alpha'd. And I think if you're not alphaing it, you're probably just going to lose in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and it's, if you let PT take up a lot of board space, or if as the Legion player you're taking a lot of board space with PT and kind of dictating where people can be on the table, that's one of the bigger strengths of the list that I've been seeing. And it's a really interesting thing because I remember talking about Kallus 1 being kind of a board control list at one point. And with the two Hellmouths, with all of the, you know, decently threading, hard-hitting, accurate Ogryn with Grievous, and it's just a really, the list can clean up extremely well. So if there's stuff around and you need to clean a zone, it can usually do that. So it definitely fits kind of the sweeper mentality in that case.
Yeah.
So do you want to move into your third game?
Yeah. So round three, I'm 1-1 with the bye, and I go up into, I don't remember his name, but the one of the two Kador players from your car.
Oh, Alex?
Yes. So Alex had Old Witch 2 Iron Fangs and Vlad 1 Winter Guard Command. And I basically told him, just drop Vlad 1. It's Vlad 1 Winter Guard Command with a Victor. There is no reason for you to play Punchy Dude Mans versus Punchy Dude Mans when you have Old Witch 2 and I have Thyra. That is a bad call. So he dropped Vlad. after me prodding him a bunch to drop Vlad and basically telling him, like, you can drop Old Witch too if you want this to be more of a game. But so he got first turn and took it, obviously. He feats with Vlad, and this, oh God, what scenario was it? Spread the net.
Yep.
So he feats with Vlad top of one to throw a rough terrain template from the victor into my, well, A, get the victor up, and B, get it to shoot a rough terrain template into my back line. So the incinerators ended up getting slower, so I had to mini feat with them bottom of one to let them run and then shield wall, or walk and repo then shield wall.
Aggressive.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. So he went super aggro. He got everything up. He also took his mortars and got a really lucky scatter and then rolled really high for his damage and killed four errants top of one.
Oh, jeez.
Two of which were in a trench that he scattered into.
Huh.
Must be nice.
Yeah, I was like, why? Why don't my scatters ever do this? Like, he not only got the perfect scatter to get a bunch of incinerators, kill a choir boy, and put the Pontate in rough terrain, and but he also got, like, four incinerators just rolling sevens or better. Without signs of importance, because he just, like, feated and ran with Vlad, or feated and charged.
That's pretty good.
It was very silly. So he moves everything up. I get some pot shots in, kill a couple dudes with errants. I have a unit of Knights Exemplar, like, basically against the left board, my left board edge, which is where his zone is. So I put Occultation on them and just run them screaming forward and say, like, hey, if you want to commit the victor over here, go ahead. There's, like, a cloud and a house in the way, and you're going to have to scatter it, and I'm just going to hope you scatter bad. And so, you know, I got some kills with errants and pushed everything forward. My incinerators mini-feeded and walked and repoed, getting to the middle zone. And I moved up my errant, my knights, got one behind, like, a wall, and just said, go, basically. So my opponent's turn, the victor comes up and actually... He shoots an AoE and it scatters right onto the Exemplar UA, the stealth one, but he neglects to boost damage on it. So it ends up living on, like, on three health from the blast. And then he only commits one Winter Guard, one Rifleman on that side to it. And then, and at this point, the UA is arm 17 and he just doesn't break armor, especially because that model is out of signs importance range. Because of how the terrain was, he wanted to hide Vlad behind a forest. So he fails to kill the UA. He kills, like, all but two errants, half of the knights on the other side. I think he leaves every stealthed knight alive, which was interesting. And he kills all but one incinerator. Every incinerator but the officer by kissing them and then just shooting them a bunch. Rolling pretty good because of signs importance. So. Yep, but he does leave the one alive who ends up charging. He forgets to Swift Hunter his Widowmaker from Marksman after he kills the last non-UA member. So the UA charges and kills the Marksman and just gets into an annoying position where he has to die to not threaten Ion Unholt the next turn. But the bigger deal is that my opponent plays super cagey because I played pretty aggressively and ends up letting me score 4 points on the bottom of two. After I one round his victor with both jacks, due to the fact that with Blood of Martyrs having Apparition as his bond and Fire of Salvation having Righteous Vengeance, they were able to, like, just get, and then feeding, they got the really long threat ranges to get onto the victor and just kind of murdered it. I high rolled super hard, so I had focus spare. So that, you know, that wasn't great, but I kill the victor and my opponent ends up, and I scored a four. I get a Knight Exemplar on my flag. He didn't score his, but even if he had, I had models contesting it. And he let me get his zone after killing, like, only four Winter Guard models. Fire Salvation, when he charged the victor, actually got into my opponent's square zone on Spread the Net and scored it.
Oh.
And I also scored the center zone. So it was 4-0. And he goes through the motions on his turn, but is unable to stop me from just running to contest his flag and win the game.
Yeah.
And then because we had a little extra time, he had to use Vlad to kill Blood of Martyrs after high rolling to kill Fire Salvation with his guns. And Blood of Martyrs was kissed. So he brings Vlad over, ends up on one camp. And so we go through the motions of showing that the Dervish was actually got to Road to War out from behind a wall and then charge, just could barely charge Vlad, and is then like a PS 18, Mat 10, blessed. So he's ignoring Blood of Kings.
Yeah. You're going to need bigger shoulder pads for that.
Yeah. It's like, my light is just going to punch you at Mat 10 PS 18.
It's a good light. Yeah.
It's pretty sweet.
Protectorate Jax.
Yeah. Protectorate Jax with Silence of Death and Carnage and Eye of Menoth. It was. Yep.
Right on.
So that game ended. Obviously, it was like, yeah, good game. Shook my opponent's hand. And then, as I said, round four, I got paired up against Schwanky. I wasn't in the running to win because of tiebreakers. The third person in our car, Scott Frank, who brought Trolls, was in the running, and I believe did place third, but I was out at that point. So I don't know what happened round two, but I'm really excited to talk about round three, but I'm really excited to talk about Cutter's round four.
Yeah, I'll go into round three real quick. So I ended up playing one of the guys I rode down with, who was also undefeated at this point, Charlie. Charlie was playing a Sorcia pairing with Kador, and he had Sorcia 1 in Armored Core and Sorcia 3 in Wolves of Winter. So Sorcia 1 is one of those casters that I think is underplayed massively. She's an incredible answer into this whole medium base meta that seems to be showing up.
Trolls.
Yeah, I mean, except Trolls having a whole theme that makes them immune to her.
Also, Scaldi gives it to champions even outside of that theme.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what to say about Trolls, except that it's kind of BS. And...
All right, then.
Immunities are a pain point of mine, but that's because I play Legion, probably. So he was playing Sorcia 1 with Armor Core. I'll go over that list in full because that's what he ended up picking. Wolves of Winter list was Sorcia 3 with Beast, 2 Juggernauts, some Forge Seers, some Doom Reavers, some Turnians. And I didn't really like the idea of either Sorcia 1 or Sorcia 3 into Primal Terrors. The Sorcia 1 list had Silas, Kodiak, Spriggan, 2 Man of War Covenants, 2 full units of Bombardiers in UA, and 3 units of Demo Core. 2 of them min, and the max one had the UA. So it was a lot of meat. And he ended up dropping the Sorcia 1 list. I had my Thagrash list, was the other list I had that I haven't gone over yet. And this list is kind of an experiment to see what I might want to pair with Animag. I've been playing Veil 2 pretty steadily, and Thagrash 1 is one of the other Oracles of Annihilation casters that I really like. I also like Absalonia 1 there currently, because I'm really into Thrones with a Mistspeaker and a Naga as being a really good answer to most Cloudwall casters. And one of the things that I've been concerned about in the past is Sorcia 1 just randomly showing up and ruining my day, because that has definitely happened in the past, along with Krios 2, who just decides to auto-hit everything. So I had some bad Fianna 2 experiences in that capacity, where she just never gets to feat, and then eventually they feat and just kill all your stuff anyway. So the Thagrash 1 list that I was playing, and is what I ended up dropping, because I didn't like the idea of a bunch of stationary Chosen and Warmongers while they get blasted off the face of the planet, was Thagrash, Carnivian, Typhon, Naga, and then 3 Shepherds and a Martyr. So this almost feels like a Children of the Dragon list.
Yeah.
I was running a Mistspeaker, which, like I said, kind of gives some play for Thrones to see through cloud walls. And it also is really good for capping flags or just like putting up a little cloud somewhere. And then I had a Sorceress in Hellion, and that thing was a boss, not in this game, but in the next game. And I had a min unit of Hex Hunters with Bale, which is one of my favorite places for them with Thagrash 1, because he just puts up fog and then ignores them and they do their thing for the rest of the game. And I had Valkyries. So I flipped back and forth quite a bit about putting Valkyries or Ice Witches in. I don't feel comfortable putting them both in at this point because I think that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of points.
It is, yeah. And they both do different things. And this list specifically is going to be playing into some of the matchups that PT really doesn't want to deal with. And so ultimately, I ended up going with Valkyries because one of the main ways that Thrones go down to shooting are massive CRAs or just really big gunshots that come in. And that was the case in both this game and the next game. So I feel like they definitely earned their place there. I gained a lot of love for Valkyries in my meta, where there's just a lot of shooting. And I also really, really like them into Siege 1, because you can do some cute things like stand a Valkyrie behind your throne, but base to base with it. And then if they try to shoot it under feet, you take the shot with the Valkyrie, and then the E-leap goes into the throne. And the throne, that's where his feet will activate. So you're getting kind of a cheaty way of making the feet not work as well on the throne, because it's just a POW 10. So those are some cute things that I was thinking of. Also like Haley 3 with long gunners, and in this case, Sersha 1 with the bombardiers. It's a really good drop because you have two thrones, you have the Valkyries, and she can absolutely destroy beast bricks or any type of brick, because when she feats and then comes in with a bunch of shattering demo core that are going to be basically weapon masters hitting all of your stationary stuff, it's bad news. It's not the kind of thing that you want to try and tank up. So the thrones help a lot there. They're still going to get really smashed up by demo core, but not as badly as, you know, anything but huge bases would. So basically what happened with this is I won going first, even though Kador gets to like advance move basically its entire army. So I kind of set myself up where this was on Spread the Net, and I just advanced cautiously. One of the big things that you have to kind of keep in mind against Armor Core is you do not want to give Bombardiers the ability to mini feat in a meaningful way if you can help it in any way possible. It's scary. Yeah. You also don't want to have Boundless Charging demo core smashing into your stuff for basically nothing. So one of the things that I was really trying to do in this matchup was keep Thagrosh safe enough and also keep the Thrones, the Carnivian, Typhon out of range, and also protect my Sorceress and Hellion so that maybe I could cause some, with the forests on the table, maybe I could cause some activation issues with Wind Ravager later if I couldn't quite clean up Bombardiers and they were going to mini feet. I wanted to cause some problems. He had elected to not have Tactician in this list, so that gave me some play with the Hex Hunters, and that I could actually send a few up as the Kador brick approached and kind of tie up the lines a little bit. And that gave me some more play with how I could play into all the gunshots. So basically what ended up happening was we kind of had this no man's land in the middle of the board where there'd be some stealth Hex Hunters standing around. Occasionally there'd be like a demo core dude running up and like splattering them. And then I would clean those up, and then I'd have sent some Hex Hunters in to shadow bind the front line, keeping Bale as safe as possible. I kept sending solos over onto my flag. His flag ended up being in a weird spot because it was kind of on the other side of a forest. So he had a Kodiak there that was immortal, essentially. Typhon was just having a bad day. I don't know if it had like 3 headaches or something, but it was not able to kill a Kodiak. That was a little unfortunate. I did Hexbolt it just so that it wouldn't be able to do grab and smash to throw the Naga out of the way that I was trying to contest it with. He ended up just splattering it anyway. But there are some cute little things you can do like that. If you have a tough beast and there's something like a Kodiak around, maybe you can make it a little bit more difficult for a scenario. But once I cleared the Kovnik off the flag with Typhon sprays, I think the first spray killed it. I just couldn't get rid of the Kodiak. And ultimately what ended up happening was I made a decision at one point to go in and kind of, I shadow bound a bunch of stuff. It was the turn where I had to kind of commit. And so I ended up clearing out some of the frontline demo core to try and dig into one of the full units of Bombardiers with a throne that had Draconic Blessing on it. And as I started killing them, I was like, you know, Sorsha Windrush, she is sitting on one focus. She's kind of in the back. I can't really reach her super well. But what I can do is spiny burst her and see if I get some good rolls and then kind of take it from there. So what I ended up doing with the throne was cleared space for it. And then the way that I'd kind of positioned the two thrones and the Carnivian gave him like a kind of okay chance at assassinating Thagrash, but it would have been an all-in. And because I had excessive healing up, it made it really dicey. And my beasts were all full. He would have had to Tempest. He would have put Sersha in a really bad spot. So there was an out for him early if he was willing to take like a 60% or maybe, but it would have been something where he would have had to commit Sersha really hard in order to do it. And then if it started going poorly, because I had three shield guards and all this other stuff, could have gotten messy pretty quickly. So he elected to not do that and just kind of throw some attrition in. I ended up shield guarding a pretty massive CRA in that was coming at a throne because he had lost track of one of my Valkyries. So it ended up toughing, which is always a beautiful thing when you take like a POW 20 shot with a Valkyrie and it toughs.
Good. Pretty good.
It's really good. And yeah, so what ended up happening was as I dug into the front lines of the armor core, I had one throne charge in, started killing them, and started doing spine bursts off of, I think it was one of the Kovniks who was standing in the back. And it's not going to die to POW 10s usually. Sersha's only RM 15 though, so she was the closest model. So every spine burst was hitting the Kovnik without issue and then was bouncing into Sersha. And what ended up happening was I did get a couple, I got one high roll to start and I was like, okay, well, the odds just went up. So I just kept doing it. And then the other throne went up, and with forests and things like that, they can see you through it. You can kind of position because the throne's threat is so weird and it's flying and has 4-inch reach. Sometimes you can charge something and get a line onto a lot of other stuff because of how big that 4-inch reach is.
Yeah.
And so I ended up getting a pretty good line to have the other throne do basically the same thing. So got a bunch of spine bursts into Sersha, and the rolls weren't all that high, but I was like, yeah, let's just see what happens with this Carnivian. I could maybe do something a little bit better with it, but let's see if I can just land a random 13. Boosted 13 onto Sersha.
Oh,
and it did. And cranked the damage roll quite a bit, left her on one box on fire. I was like, all right, well, you know, like here we are. So may as well go in with Thagrash and threw a spell martyr up. And it could get within 10 inches because it was just kind of hanging out in the back lines behind all the other stuff that was kind of blocking it. And Thagrash needed a boosted 11 to hit and obliterate and landed it. And that is the end of Sersha. So,
okay, two questions. One.
Only two.
Could you have obliterated, because the Kovnik was the closest thing to Sersha. Presumably that means, was the Kovnik in range that you could have obliterated it and hit Sersha with the boosted blast damage instead?
Yes. I could have obliterated the Kovnik. It would have been dice off 7. That might have been the better play. Probably is the better play.
So secondary question, could you have metamorphosis the Kovnik and then punched Sorsha to death?
Yeah. So I was looking at that and he was aware of that threat. So the problem was all the stuff that was in front of Thagrash. I would have had to do something weird with the Carnivian to get it out of the way.
No. Okay. Sorry. I meant, could you have used the spell martyr to?
No.
Okay.
You can't use the spell martyr. It has to be cast from Thagrosh.
Oh wait, it does?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that sucks.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that would be crazy. Also, for reference, you cannot sprint after using metamorphosis because that would be amazing. That was the first thing I looked at. I was like, I want a Thagrosh ninja to be diving into units and then sprinting away because that would be fun.
Just blowing everything up with the fire AoEs. That'd be all right.
Sounds amazing.
Sure does.
Not how it works.
Bummer.
So,
yep. Ah, it sucks.
So, yeah, the obliterate, that would have been a better play. I think that the Kovnik was still alive, I think, because the Carnivian spray is big. And it's very possible that I killed him with it.
Okay, so if you killed him with it, that's... I'm just, like, I'm imagining a scenario where you just, like... You're like, yeah, I'm just going to go for the boosted 11. And then you look at the table afterwards and you're like, wait a minute. I could have just done a boosted 7 instead.
Yeah.
Or a boosted 8.
A boosted 8 would be a lot better than a boosted 11.
Sure would.
So, yeah, I also could have... When I was going all in on it, I could have tried activating Thagrosh first. And bring the Naga back and then have the Naga put its animus on the Carnivian so that it would only need a boosted 11 instead of a boosted 13. So that would have also been a good play, maybe, if I was going all in on it, but I wasn't committed to the Thagrosh plan unless the Carnivian hit.
Wait, oh, okay. Wraithbane doesn't work on spells, right?
It'll work on Windrush because it grants a defensive.
Oh, okay. No, I meant it didn't work on it doesn't work on Thagrosh's spells, right? It's weapons.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, good. I was about to say, like, wait a minute, couldn't you could have made it a boosted 9?
Yeah, it's just ranged in melee.
Okay.
That would be pretty good. Eyeless Sight works in that capacity, so the Mistspeaker can do that kind of shenanigans if you're trying to see through stealth or clouds or whatever. So that's what ended up happening. I kind of cheesed that out. We were talking about it on the way back, and there's this idea called hit confirming that Alex was talking about in the fighting game community. And I play Legion like that a lot. I used to do that way more in Mark II when Veil 2 had Obliterate and Refuge and was just ridiculous. Is you take a low chance assassination run and you have some things that happen earlier in the turn. Where you're like, okay, well, maybe this will land. And if it does, then the chance of the assassination goes way up. And if it doesn't, I haven't committed that much, so I can kind of back off now. And, you know, like, that's something that I do a lot with Legion. I like lists that can really reach out and touch you in bad places. So the Spiny Bursts were my version of that. I was still getting work done. I could have done sprays, and that would have been a much better attrition plan. But when the first Spiny Burst did like 5 damage to Sersha, I was like, all right, well, let's see where this goes. So yeah, it was interesting. I definitely cheesed, like I had no right to get that, but I also could have abandoned that plan at some point based on what was going on. So when the chances just kept getting better, the only role that was really kind of ridiculous was the Carnivian. And, you know, sometimes you just have to roll a 13. So that's kind of what happened there. I feel like I might have had an okay attrition game there. We did some math, and I think he, with the board state the way it was, he could have splattered the throne. So I was in kind of deep at that point. If I had changed tracks earlier, I think I could have killed more Manowar.
So question, for the attrition purposes, splatting the throne, that was numbers splatting the throne without it being, presumably without Shatter?
Yeah, they can't use Shatter on it.
Like, that's why I'm like, I want to agree, but by the same token, it's Thagrosh, so, like, Arm 22 is a thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he actually rolled it out, and you can do the math on it. They were hurt a little bit. He had shot them a little bit. Yeah, I mean, the list hits pretty hard. That many Manowar can do some work, and he would have gotten the double Bombardier shots off that turn. He had a Spriggan. So the Spriggan alone almost kills one of the thrones because that thing's ridiculous now. So that wasn't the best plan, but because of the way that it started playing out, I went for it. So I also had a Valkyrie kill a Manowar by herself, and it was great. Yeah, oh, I was really trying to not rely on that. It was a demo core, and I think, I don't remember if it had taken damage from a hex hunter or not, but she womaned up and just like smashed it. So that was cool.
So I know we're not supposed to be getting game four yet, but that goes into one of my favorite parts about game four.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll get into game four right now.
Let's get into the final game and then wrap this baby up.
Yeah. So the last game was against Nick Massa, who was playing Mercs. Zane / Schlumpmess had played him earlier.
And lost.
Schwanky also played him and lost.
Schwanky also, as a note, is totally switching up his pairing after this past weekend.
Yeah, we chatted a little bit after. We might get him on the cast at some point to talk some Scorn.
Yeah, I'll try to get him in.
But yeah, it's Nick. Nick was having a pretty good day. He was running the Magnus 2 list that we talked about earlier, and also regulars with Ostrom, because, like, is there another theme in Mercs? Ostrom was running... This was, like, a kind of...
Okay, to be fair, there is the Cephalix theme.
Okay, yeah.
That doesn't count, and you know it.
Yes, it does. Nope. Thexus is a really strong caster.
Oh, God, that's not what I meant.
Oh, well, no. Cephalix stuff isn't in irregulars.
I know.
Oh, okay.
So... The irregulars Ostrom is one of the lists that I've had like some pretty bad experiences with. I played Charles Soong with my Veil 2 Double Thrones list. That was pretty brutal. He didn't miss any attacks the entire time. So that was unfortunate. This Ostrom list was a little bit more slanted towards melee damage, which is actually a little worse in some ways into my list, and a little better in some other ways. It can crack armor a little bit better. He was running 3 drillers, 2 gunners, which are the just little like hand cannon ones. Thorwind the Avalancher, which I want to say was terrifying all game. And 2 of the Hammer Dwarves, Max, and then 2 of the artillery units, and then Ragman, Iris, and Eilish. It's just a really gross list, and the heavies all advance move, and I think the Jack gets flank or something, and then Thor is tuning it up, and it's like the range is crazy. It has snipe on it, and it's like an auto knockdown AoE 4 POW 14 thing.
So it gets flank on its like POW 14 shield.
Yeah, which I guess a POW 14 weapon master attacks okay.
Yeah, but that list has no way to give it focus as a note, so it's only really getting 1 attack.
Yeah, which is fine, because all it did all game was it sat in the back and had its range 16 AoE 4 POW 14 auto knockdown attack that was actually POW 16 because it was Jack Marshalled, and Thor gave it boosted attack and damage rolls. So, yeah, it was fine to just have that one. The shield's power strength 15.
Yeah, I just checked it. But yeah, like it's like I don't think that's unreasonable for 17 points.
It's
like,
just really good.
Yeah, but it's like I think 17 points is like where it should be for that.
Yeah, so going into it, I am not really super comfortable with either of those lists, with my Animag list or my Thag Rush list. Ultimately, I felt like I couldn't play Animag because the Magnus 2 list just felt really unpleasant with Ogryn because he would feed on them. The Idrians would just annihilate them. He had a plus 6 damage swing in that list. There was a lot of stuff that would have been bad. He had Orin. So it was a lot of things that would have made playing into that really unpleasant. And he felt like he couldn't play Magnus 2 because of my Thag Rush list. So it was an interesting combination. So we both kind of talked ourselves into Ostrom and Thag Rush, and it was a list that I was really interested to see how it would play into some of these matchups that I didn't feel really good with PT into, because even though it is fairly well-rounded, it is kind of geared more towards the stuff that PT doesn't want to deal with. So he ended up getting first, and he runs all of his stuff up after all the Jacks move. And this one was on, what's the name of this? It's like 2 circles, 2 rectangles with 2 objectives.
It's standoff. It's standoff.
Standoff. Okay. Yeah, so standoff. I ended up taking the stupid objective that gives me Pathfinder, even though there's like two models that might use that, because I was like, you know, there's a giant forest in the center of the table, and Typhon is just incapable of normal ambulation for a Legion model, and maybe Thagrosh will use it, who knows. Basically, he just kind of runs up everything, positions fairly, kind of split the two Hammer Dwarf units, and has all of his drillers and gunners and the Avalancher and the artillery central with Ostrom. Ostrom's feat is ridiculous because it's model unit, and he gives tactician within his range. And so he just clips the edge of one model and the two Hammer Dwarf units, the Forge Guard. And so the whole unit gets the feat. It's gross.
It's really good.
It's good. It's a good Mark II feat. I moved up. I spread my Hex Hunters out to try and mitigate some of the Avalanche's BS and also all the artillery. But like, there's only so much you can do, really. Hoped that Bale would live through all the AoEs. And ultimately, the range is so long that he was just lobbing shots into the throne anyway. And he feated top of two. This is one of the things that I think swung the game. He feated it, makes all the little dwarves speed 7, which is pretty good when they're normally speed 4. Their armor goes through the roof. You know, everything is +3 speed, +3 arm, Pathfinder. So I understand why he did it there. I'm not sure into my list if it was the right thing to do or not. I was trying to keep my thrones very far back along with my battle group. I tried to make it so there was only maybe one of the battle group models that could get to any one of my bigger models, hoping that that would be enough to save it with Thagrosh Azura. I think it was probably a good bet. And if he wanted to go in on something like that, I think it would have been a bad plan. I think he might have been able to wait another turn to feat. And ultimately, being able to hit me first and then have the feat, I think may have ended up being pretty good. Because what ended up happening is he put the dwarves into the two zones, the two circular zones, kind of set up this wall of drillers and had the gun bunnies move up and kind of shoot some stuff. But he didn't actually get to hit anything. Like, he didn't use the feat offensively. He used it more as like a positioning thing, which actually was one of the things that would have really helped in the Animag games if my opponents had kind of played more forward like that. But with Thagrosh, he's kind of crawling up the table. I'm trying to stay outside the 13-inch range of the jacks. And by losing that 3 speed and also losing Pathfinder, it made the Thrones and Typhon and the Carnivian and Thagrosh a lot safer, because now I only had to deal with dwarves threading 9 inches. I only had to deal with Jack's threading 11. Like, it was a lot better for me that way. And what ended up happening is I kind of shifted the Hex Hunters, because they have Apparition, so they can kind of reorient themselves pretty well. I moved a Sorceress and Hellion up onto the left flank and basically put down the little puncture, the Blightstorm AoE, and got half of the dwarves on one side in that, and then the Hex Hunters just went up and annihilated them.
This is one of the
hex bolts around. And
okay, can I just say, from watching it from the outside, your Hex Hunter play here is one of the coolest things. Just yeah, like, oh legit. My god! Not just that, right? So you did that, but you also were like correctly targeting your things. You had one dude go in and shadow bind one of his drillers, and then he didn't have any pieces to kill that dude who had shadow bound the driller. So the driller didn't shake shadow bind and just punched it. Yep. Instead of trying to like threaten your pieces.
Yeah, it ended up working out well. I mean, there was a nice line of Hex Hunters. They were all stealth, which he said was a problem. They did spike a couple of the Hex Bolt rolls. I had to kill one of the dwarves in the back with it. And then I actually got some Hex Bolts off on some other things in the area, which were nice.
I think you got 3 Hex Bolts into the back 4 dudes.
Yeah, it only killed one of them. But, you know,
I think that's average, right? Because you're dice off 8 or dice off, because it's POW 13 and they're armed 21.
Yeah, I think it was dice off 8.
Yeah, so like 1 in 3 is probably, you know, pretty good.
Yeah, and I like hex bolting Jax if possible, because especially if I have a bunch of single base models that they can't deal with very easily, I don't want them trampling over everything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, sometimes you just get chip damage on something and that ends up swinging things in your favor quite a bit. One of the thrones just had to run because I wanted to have a strong control on that side of the table. And I felt like with the full unit of the Hex Hunters, the Naga, the Sorceress, the Throne, that there were only four dwarves left then and a Shadowbound Driller. So one of the gun bunnies ended up having to run into that zone to try and stop me from scoring it. And the other zone also had Hammer Dwarves in it and a Driller. And what ended up going on over there was the Kernivian assaulted a Driller or a gun bunny and sprayed fire all over the dwarves and killed the Driller. Typhon sprayed down another one of the dwarf units and killed most of them, or another little pocket of them. So what ended up happening was some of the dwarves burned to death, some of them just had died, and then the rest that were there ended up charging in and killing the Kernivian, which is fine because it's Thagrash 1, I'll bring him back. And Typhon was in a pretty safe spot in general, and I felt like Typhon can take out six dwarves that are standing around and probably a Driller, along with a throne that was hanging out there that had Draconic Blessing on it. One of the mistakes I did make there was I put Thagrash a little bit too close to the objective because I'd forgotten about the AoE knockdown on the range 16 Driller. So it ended up hitting my objective and knocking Thagrash down, but he didn't have any way to really follow up on that other than the mortars. So, and one of the mortars couldn't even see him. So he didn't end up following up on that threat at all, but it was kind of a moment like, oh, Thagrash is knocked down. And, you know, his defense being 16 against most shooting is noteworthy. And his arm being 16 with excessive healing is not going to save him from everything. So Bale was hiding behind a forest this whole time and behind a throne, and the Hex Hunters were kind of doing the work. He threw a Driller up in two of the zones, the zone that Typhon was hanging out near. He did end up clearing, and he went up 3-1 on this turn, which was a problem. Maybe it was 3-0 even. Yeah, the next turn was, like, if you look at the pictures, I feel like this is where the Thagrash list definitely shined. Yeah, so he had stuck a gun bunny behind a wall, just kind of hanging out in my zone, just barely touching it. And the Hex Hunters with the Sorceress did their thing again. They killed all of the Hammer Dwarves that were left in that zone. They, like, shadowbound one dude, one of the Drillers in his zone. And then I really, really tried to get a shadowbind onto the gun bunny behind the wall with my Naga, buying boosted melee attacks so that the throne could hit it a little easier, because I didn't really want to roll sevens to hit it. I would much prefer to roll fours. That didn't happen. Maybe I should have just boosted damage on it and hope for the best, but ultimately I couldn't score that circular zone. And I ended up going into, I cleared the other zone. It was fun because I had a Valkyrie kill a Hammer Dwarf. I had a Shepherd kill a Hammer Dwarf.
Oh my God.
Shepherds killed so much this game. It was great.
Yeah, I had two Shepherds that were kind of following Typhon around, but they decided that they just would prefer to kill things. So they're mat 5, power strength 9. They were going to town. It was kind of like there were definitely support models that were following Typhon around, cleaning up his, like, whatever was left over or clearing lanes for him. And the two thrones ended up killing the Driller that was in my zone, allowing me to score that. The one Valkyrie that was left, because I had taken a shot and the Valkyrie didn't tough, so I could score the zone with one of my Valkyries that was left, who was also killing stuff. And then came down to, at this point, I think it was 4-4 is what the...
Yes, what so he was running out of pieces by this point.
Yeah, basically all that was left now was a gun bunny, a Driller, two of the artillery, the Avalancher, and Eilish and Osram and Thor. One of the thrones did do some pretty miraculous work by spine bursting a bunch of Merc solos, and I absolutely love doing that. It's one of my favorite things, is if there's a driller standing next to Iris and you're like, well, I'm definitely not hitting Iris, but she can take some pow tens as I kill these hammer dwarves. So that ended up happening. I think it killed Iris, it killed Ragman, because I shot the objective to kill Ragman. Didn't kill Eilish, and left him on a couple boxes. And what ended up happening was, this was getting pretty far into the game. I think it was like turn 5 or 6 where we got here. And when Thagrosh finally had to move over to a circular zone because the Hex Hunters were just tying up everything that was left, Typhon ended up killing the objective in their zone and also killed the last driller. And then I think I ended up killing the Gun Bunny in that zone, in the circular zone. I had the Valkyrie and the two Shepherds killed Eilish, which was fun. I think it was a Shepherd who actually ended up killing him. And basically what it came down to was, he was staring down two thrones that were contesting multiple zones. Typhon was standing like right in the middle of the board, right in the middle of his zone, kind of being a pain. And I had a Carnivian in my zone. I had Thagrosh in the circular zone. And he did go for a last-ditch assassination and just couldn't make it. Ended up scoring, I think, I think I got to 8-4, so I only needed 1 point. And then he couldn't kill Thagrosh, and he couldn't meaningfully contest the zones to pull out of it.
So he only had 3 pieces that were allowed to contest. So it wasn't just he couldn't meaningfully, he literally could not have contested enough pieces.
Yeah, that's true. I did do one thing that was a mistake, and it would have meant I would have had to spend an extra fury somewhere. I don't think it would have ended up being a problem, but one of the last attacks that Typhon had, I had 1 fury left. I got a crit on the Avalancher and decided to just throw it out of the zone.
This was another driller. The Avalancher was alive at the end.
Oh, sorry. It was the driller. I ended up getting a crit on the driller that was towing my zone and decided, well, I might not actually kill it. It has several boxes left, and threw it into a artillery dude. And I thought that the way it worked was the artillery was a large base, so it counted as a large base, even though it was man-sized. Reviewing that, it counts as a small base for everything. It's just the actual size of it is different. So I would have had to spend the extra fury to boost the damage roll on that instead of just having him sit there.
So to be fair, you low rolled the damage rolls. That's the reason that you threw him. You rolled like a 3 and a 5, I think. And then like another 5.
Yeah, it still ended up being, that was a misplay on my part. So it wouldn't have affected the scoring at all. Maybe the dice would have come out differently, or I would have had to spend that fury. But yeah, that was a mistake on my part. So I apologize for that. But overall, the game did end up turning out way better than I thought. I think he hadn't played into this particular matchup before. I hadn't played it either. But I think if he had kind of played a little bit more aggressively with the feat, using it more offensively, and then follow up with the defense as opposed to using it for a position, maybe that would have been better. But the speed for dwarves may have just been left so far behind the battle at that point too, that could have been an issue. So I need to talk to him more about it. But I think for me, the attrition just went really in my favor when I was allowed to engage on my terms, and I kind of ignored most of the battle group on his feet because I didn't need to deal with it. And then the hammer dwarves ended up getting fairly annihilated by the 4 sprays and the hex hunters with the puncture aura.
I'm not sure. I think he was playing a version that's going to have a little bit more of a hard time against your list compared to just like the more gun heavy version with all of the gun bunnies and maybe even the siege crawler. Thank you.
Yeah, if there was a siege crawler, I think it would have been harder for me. Yeah. I think in general, I could have still used the Valkyries for that, but it would have dictated their positioning a little bit better. I think the best build into what I was playing probably would have been more of a Gun Bunny spam, but I don't, that one's kind of lost some of its appeal, maybe because of how scenarios are playing out now.
Also because I like boosted 12s are only okay into PT.
Yeah, that is another thing, is it would have made Primal Terrors a lot more attractive to me. And so it's possible that could have changed the matchup too, because especially if he's running the spray ones, the Pow 10s just aren't really going to hurt the Chosen that much. So on average, they don't do any damage. So yeah, the problem would be that, I guess, from their perspective, the Magnus list still might have scared me away from that a little bit, but
yeah,
it definitely would have changed things.
Yeah, cool. I think it's a play thing. I think your opponent probably could have just kept the dwarves back towing things, and then and he even said at the time, like, he bunched up really hard for that first Blight Burst.
Mm-hmm.
He just handed it to you. He let you spray like four or five dwarves with the Carnivian Assault,
mm-hmm.
which is just a mistake.
Yeah, I think it's one of the tricky parts of the Thagrash list is it does have a lot of weird workarounds. It has a lot of sprays. It has the Spine Burst that can kind of do some tricky things. It has a bunch of Hex Bolts. It can get through armor. It's got some interesting play. I almost committed Thagrash into fighting, but thought better of it eventually. That was probably the wise thing to do.
I want to really point out how sweet your play was with just, you were like, I forgot to feed, it's fine. And then you respond an entire Carnivian just to give you a transfer target.
Yeah,
Stop that, like, assassination attempt.
It's a good way to... It's a pretty healthy transfer target. He also sat in a zone in case the throne that was in the zone also was pretty beat up. That's the one that had been shot a lot. So if he had cleared that, it may have helped him with the scenario game. But a Carnivian sitting behind a forest just hanging out was also fine.
Essentially, so obviously, Cutter, you've described four wins. So you came in first.
Yeah, I did.
Congratulations.
It turned out well. Really like the pairing that I had. I got to test some matchups. I won a Crucible Guard army box, which is something that I considered toying around with. So
I figured out what we can do with that.
Yeah.
What we do is we put it into like a bowl and then we set it on fire and prove that they're not immune to fire. No?
Or you just play them like better croaks and they're friendly faction. And you're like, huh, this is how you shoot well with fire. And I just sit here with my Menoth and Legion, and I'm like, that's how you shoot with fire.
Well, I guess Cass is canceled. Cutter has a superior army, so that's good. Right on. Congratulations. That's super cool.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, they were really cool games. I got along really well with all the guys I played against, and I'm not sure. I'm probably going to sit on that box for a little while and maybe pick up some more stuff later. But I'm definitely into Legion. I'm going to be playing that in a couple big events, so we'll see how that goes.
So I want to ask, are you coming down to Nova? I don't remember.
Yes, I will be at Nova.
Okay, sweet. So we'll have to try to get a game in.
Yep.
Are you going, because I know Comic Zone, right, is the place that we played?
This was at Toy Wiz.
Toy Wiz, right, sorry. I know the guy who ran it talked about, I don't remember his name.
Aaron,
yes, talked about doing another game at the end of September.
Hopefully I can do that. It's a little hard for me to plan in the future beyond like a couple weeks right now, but I'm hoping to get out to more events in the area, so yep. Hopefully I'll be there.
Yep. Ron, I want to ask you, are you going to the WTC fundraiser?
I'm not. I just spent the last two weekends in Toronto, so it's really hard to swing a third in a row.
Gotcha. I'm going up, as I've talked about a little bit. Me and Wolf have a team.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to cheer you guys on for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Hopefully we don't suck too bad.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it. As always, join us on Discord. The link will be on the show notes. And come hang out in the Legion channel. We're pretty great. Cutter, again, congratulations on your win. Swamp Mist, congrats on winning one or two. and a bye. So
I won one game and a bye, but I single listed.
There you go.
So I feel pretty okay about one and a bye and skipping round four.
Right on. All right. Thank you all for listening to the 13th episode of Blightbringers.
Have a good night, everyone.
Cheers.